You are listening to Ellie Did Weiss Podcast, and I'm here with Gia Scott-Heron to talk about her show at the Hollywood Fringe, Gil Scott-Heron's Bluesology, playing at the Hudson Theater in Hollywood, June 19th through the 21st, 2026. An eight-time nominated NAACP-nominated play celebrating the life and poetry of Gil Scott-Heron, fellow well-known for his song The Revolution Will Not Be Televised and Whitey on the Moon, to name a few, and also instrumental in early hip-hop. Not only do we get to experience the music and poetry in the show, but Gia Scott-Heron, Gil's daughter, is a part of the show. Glad we get to talk a little bit today before it's remounting June 19th. Welcome to the podcast, Gia.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. It is Gil Scott-Heron Bluesology, meaning more like he is bluesology. Like, he was a person who was a fan of and a, you know, almost a mad scientist when it came to the blues. So it's like, you know, it's a part of him. He felt like it was a part of him and he was a part of it. So Gil Scott-Heron Bluesology. He was connected to the blues far more than he was to rap. That's why he totally, you know, disassociated himself with that nickname, the Godfather of Rap, because he did not consider himself as such. He felt that rap, even proto-rap, the kind that they're, you know, the version that they are trying to say he was the progenitor of, existed far, you know, it had existed for centuries prior to his existence back on the motherland. So he said, you know, folks been rapping long before I got here. So why, you know, why give me the credit for something that's already exists? Like Christopher Columbus being credited with discovering America. You know, you can't discover something that's already been discovered by others. You can't, you know, be the godfather of something that's already been in progress. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So anyway, but he did consider himself very much a bluesologist, someone who studied it, who loved and enjoyed hearing it, playing it. So, yeah, he was a jazz musician. Some say a blues musician. Some say he was the Black Bob Dylan. Some say the Bob Dylan was the white Gil Scott-Heron. So, some of those types of things are the types of things that you'll learn and see and hear during our show.
Blues has so many different kind of times and eras. Knowing your father was something that really appealed to them. Was Chicago blues, Delta blues?
You know, Thelonious Monk. I mean, he has even a song, Lady Day and John Coltrane. He has another piece called Is That Jazz, where he refers to several players by their nicknames as opposed to their government names. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, you know, all of the greats, you know, Count Basie, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. So Billie Holiday, all of those people. And John Coltrane especially had a huge impact on my dad. He loved himself some John Coltrane and Langston Hughes and all of the writers from, you know, the Black Renaissance and the Harlem Renaissance.
And the show is not new. It's been around now for 3 years, maybe a little bit longer than 3 years and stuff like that.
Right.
And when you first decided to put this on in honor of your father, did you ever think that you'd be doing it now in 3 years?
Oh, God, no. That's what's so crazy about it. One of the craziest things or aspects of this is that we're still doing it. At first, it was intended to just be a one and done, just part of a series that Tuesday was doing, honoring different, you know, great Black authors, poets, and storytellers, and they'd already done Langston Hughes and Nikki Giovanni, and I was already developing my own tribute for my father called Be the Revolution. And she called me up and said, hey, you know, we want to do your dad next. Like, you know, because when they asked Nikki, because Nikki was alive at the time. Oh, she's since passed on. May she rest in peace. But at the time she was alive, they asked if they could do this for, you know, use her material to do a tribute. And then she was like, sure, go ahead. And then they, you know, obviously needed to ask me, since my father's passed on, if I was okay with it. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. You know, before I go ahead and continue with my own tribute, let's do this show. We did it at the Willie Agee Theater. And once we did it, it was so funny because as many people that attended the show, there were so many more that were like, oh my God, I missed it. Wait, you had a show for Gil Scott-Heron and I didn't see it. So there was just all this, you know, outcry. All these people were so pissed off and upset. So we added some more dates. We asked if we could go back to the Willie Agee. They were like, sure. And we went back and did some more dates and it still wasn't enough. And then we started getting awarded for it. So then it was like a whole other, you know, aspect to it. Because it's weird how when you go into something with the intention of showing your gratitude and appreciation, how it tends to swing back around. And then people start appreciating and showing their gratitude for you and the way you chose to show your gratitude. So it's just like, whoa, okay, like mutual admiration society. Like, we were trying to show you guys how much we admire him. Now you guys are trying to tell us how much you admire us. So it's like, it was just a beautiful blossoming of like this thing that just kind of organically got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I never realized how much, you know, larger than life my father even was. You know, when he was alive, he was just my dad. And like, he's still my dad. But like, now I realize why, like, whoa, he was a lot more than just my dad, like, to a lot of people. So
yeah. Was he the kind of father, would you say, that tried to maybe shelter you from his fame at the time when you were growing up? Or no, it was kind of not possible to do that?
I mean, he wasn't around enough for that to be possible. Like, he was pretty much like, you know, especially after my parents split up and divorced, you know, my mom's sole, like, well, one of her main primary goals was to give me like a routine, normal life where I go to school and, you know, I have, you know, I live in a certain place and have a certain set of friends and have, you know, this education and have routine and normalcy and not all this, you know. So my dad was touring and still doing all these things that, you know, involve the industry. My mom was like, you know, I'm retired from the industry. You go do that, you know, just, you know, and I'll just raise our daughter, you know. So I did see it a lot, though, whenever we did hang out. And in so far as you saying that it was impossible for him to shelter me from, whenever I was with him, it never failed. There'll at least be a couple of people that would be like, hey, are you Gil Scott-Heron? Hey, Gil, can I get an autograph? Hey. And some of them would have, at the time, this was pre-cell phone picture era, right? So, but some of them would have like a disposable camera or Nikon on them in their car, and they'd run to their car and get their camera and be like, hey, man, can I get a picture with you or something? So there was still that, you know, that whole celebrity aspect to it where they would interrupt us, like, you know, mid conversation and be like, oh, you know, man, you're my idol. Like, man, I grew up on you or this and that and third. And so, yeah, it would happen. It wasn't anything that he could hide even if he wanted to, but he didn't want me to follow in his footsteps. Sorry, Dad, you know. So that was actually what's weird is that was something we were working on right around the time of his death. He was going to introduce me to some people at XL Recordings and see what could develop, or, you know, what kind of projects I might be able to, you know, or be signed to them or whatever. So that's sort of an unfortunate aspect of his passing, was that, you know, we were thinking of, you know, moving in that direction, either, you know, together collaboratively or, you know, individually, me launching my own project or my own album through them. But it didn't, you know, it didn't come to pass. But I'm glad things worked out the way they did.
Yeah. So like, hearing you say it, almost sounds kind of like a George Lucas situation. And when I, with Star Wars, and kind of like, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but kind of like George Lucas, he did Star Wars, and it became like a really, really big movie. Everyone kind of knows what Star Wars is, but he really wanted to do smaller films and other more like experimental stuff. But, you know, he always complained. He's like, I didn't really get to do that because Star Wars took up so much of my time. And I guess I'm thinking you were planning on trying to do your own personal project for your father before Bluesology. And is that still something that's still in the cards, or has Bluesology kind of become that project in the process?
It did for a minute, not so much anymore. I have been able, like, I will be soft launching my own series on my YouTube channel called OMC, for short for Off My Chest, where, you know, I take something and I deep dive into it and get it off my chest. So,
right.
So yeah, when something makes me go OMG, then I got a OMC, you know, so yeah. Get it off my chest. So yeah, that's what I'm going to be. I know some of the episodes that I already have in the can for the soft launch are deep dives of some of my father's lesser known pieces, like Angola, Louisiana, and a poem for Jose Campos Torres. So those are some lesser known, so, you know, some digging in crates, some deep, you know, cuts that most, I think his stans, you know, the real fans will really enjoy those. And some who are more casual fans will be like, oh, let me explore this artist. I didn't know about this piece or, you know, its significance or its relevance or its impact. So, yeah. And I relate them. Every piece, I relate it to what's going on today, because that's one of the things that drives so many people and have drove so many people to our shows. So many people are amazed by the fact that so many things that my dad was talking about are the same things that are plaguing our society and our country today, you know, and still haven't fixed anything that he was complaining about over 50 years ago. You know, it should be a description that no longer fits us. We should have outgrown those things, but it speaks a lot to our corruption and our inability to actually, you know, grow to our full potential as a country and actually fully realize the Constitution and, you know, the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and how it applies, should apply to all and not just some.
So, with all of these things, attacks on DEI, attacks on education, trying to make it so it's harder to teach about racism and this stuff in education and stuff like that. Have you added anything that's updated within the times right now? Or has the show stayed so relevant that it's really relatively still how it was the first year you put it on?
Sure. Just like our bios that are on our website, GilScottHeronBluesology.com, like most of this stuff is so relevant already that minus a few tweaks here and there, everything else is relatively can remain the same. Aside from me shouting out, you know, different folks like Pam Bondi, Kristi Noem and Tulsi Gabbard, who have all resigned from the administration, so I'm giving them a special shout out, and other little things here and there that we, you know, alter in the, you know, my dad's original lyrics to say in the show.
Yeah.
It doesn't, that's the beauty of, I mean, that's the beauty of it and the pitifulness of our country. It doesn't need that much, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Mentioned the ICE raids and a few other things, and the war in Iran. We mentioned one of the, you know, Tehran in Johannesburg, just like we mentioned Gaza before, because at that time the war in Gaza and Israel and Hamas was going on. So that's the beauty of those things. We can kind of take a snapshot and kind of, you know, inject those things into the production as we go.
Yeah.
To make sure that those things are being highlighted and that they're not being overlooked. But yeah, it overall, like the overall statement of that, like, this is horrible and we need to, you know, we need to stop this. I don't know if it's a game of chicken or if it's like, how low can you go? But whatever it is, we need to stop before we gone to, you know, past a point of no return, basically.
Yeah. What's the preparation for? Have you done it long enough where it's almost like natural and you're very comfortable going on the stage and you can almost improv a little bit? Or is it a very kind of structured production we're talking about?
It's neither. It's kind of like, or both. It's both and neither at the same time. It's kind of half and half. Like, they're, you know, like the lyrics and stuff, it's sort of like they've kind of become a part of us. I've been doing my pieces for so long. I mean, even before Gil Scott-Heron Bluesology. So, like, yeah, in my sleep, in the shower, you know, while the TV's playing, whatever, while I'm in the kitchen cooking, it's like it, I can, you know, multitask. I can fold laundry and do the my version of The Revolution Will Be Televised, or my part of Inner City Blues, or Home Is Where the Hatred Is. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but we do rehearse once or twice a week at the director's request and at a location, secret location, that only known, you know, known only to the cast, but we meet there and we go through the staging, because that's the thing that we keep kind of tweaking and making sure we have down packed, that we want to make sure is perfect and perfectly done for the audience. So yeah, it is structured, but it's not so rigid that like we can't play around with it or have fun with it. And we've been doing it now for so long. And so many, that's the beauty too. So many of my friends that are in the show were such fans of my father even before the show. They already knew the pieces by heart that they wanted to do in the show, right? So
yeah,
it's like they didn't even have to memorize it first. They already knew the piece. And then Phyllis just had to like tweak us and go, okay, do this. Okay, if you do this, it's more impactful. Okay, if you stand here at this point, then it's more engaging. You know, certain things that just enhance what we already do naturally as performers and what's already coming out through the piece, through my dad's words.
Great. I love theater and stuff like that. But sometimes mm-hmm. it's a situation where you're like, you're preaching to the choir. It's like to people that are already converted in this kind of way. Do you feel like a show like this can expand past that? And how does that happen?
First, I wanted to shout out our fabulous director, Phyllis Bailey Brooks. But to answer your question, that is our like main primary like imperative. That is our main goal, is to reach the next generation, get this, you know, information and these, this music and these messages into the minds and the hands of Gen Z and Gen Alpha. And we have made some headway. I mean, we do. There are some young heads like Earl Sweatshirt, and others that have heard of my dad, and Kendrick Lamar has done a great job shouting him out. Beyonce actually used a little small snippet of my dad saying the revolution will be live, the revolution will be, you know, won't be will not be televised during her tour, her Renaissance tour. So there are ways in which just organically, even without us lifting a finger, that other artists are sort of, you know, whispering and referencing him, so that these young people, the ones who already, and these are the young people my dad would want to follow him as a fan anyway. Those are the ones go, wait, whose voice is that? Wait, what is Lamar, you know, what is the, you know, K-Dot talking about when he said, you know, this revolution will be televised. You got the, you know, the right message, but the wrong guy or something like that. So then it's, they're like, wait, who is he referencing? Who is that? Okay, Gil Scott-Heron, who is that? And then they do their own research. My father always said, always do your own research and be careful where you get your information. Always double check your facts, triple check your facts. Make sure that, you know, it's not just this one outlet that's saying this one crazy. And that's the even more today, because you got fake news and you got out, you got clickbait, you got all this other stuff that will literally design AI slop, literally designed to distract you, right? So it's even worse now. That's the thing. A lot of the stuff that my dad warned about that was even happening back then is just so much more, it's so much more egregious now, so much more blatant, it's so much more pungent and potent and awful now. It's like whatever he was talking about, but like, on steroids, just to the extreme, you know, supercharged, supersized. So that's the thing. We are trying to, you know, reach, that is our demographic, you know, anyone age, my age and below, 40 and below. That's the, but we also want to delight the fans that have stuck with the A1 since day ones. You know what I mean? My daddy's A1s. We want to delight them too. We want to let them know, listen, we still out here. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we ain't forgot Nathan. We're out here, boots on the ground, and we're going to do what needs to be done until the fight, you know, until something has been, until we've at least moved the needle a little bit. You know what I mean? Hopefully, yeah, leave the world off better than the way we found it. you know? And so, this is for the fans, but it's definitely for the young people. And what we're using is social media, and we're using word of mouth, and we're reaching out to local, you know, local entrepreneurs and local businesses, and just trying to spread the word. And we're doing things like this podcast. We're just using any and all outlets we can to try to spread the message and let people know that we're here.
So, you know, people know your father for his poetry and his activism. What's something about Gil Scott Heron that people might not realize?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, again, we try to highlight in the show. We're not just honoring him as a musician or an activist. We're also trying to give people a little bit of a sneak peek into who he was as a human being and as a father. I'll just tell you this one thing without giving away the entire anecdote, but my father was actually shadowed and followed by the FBI for 15 years. And those that want to hear more about that story, why I know that, and any of the details surrounding that, you got to come see Gil Scott Heron Bluesology, because I tell you all about it and just the kind of thing that that can mean for someone. Just like Muhammad Ali, when you choose to speak out and you, you know, take a stand for something, you're not just you're utilizing your celebrity and your position as a public figure for good. But freedom of speech ain't free. Newsflash, headline, breaking news. Freedom of speech isn't free for everyone in the back. You may not get like jailed. It may not be like what happens to you in North Korea or in Russia or China, but there are consequences that have to be paid and made. Even back then, Muhammad Ali was receiving death threats. Even today, Marjorie Taylor Greene, when she spoke out against Trump, she started getting death threats from other MAGA people. People these days, they will dox you on the internet. And back then, they would do things like, you know, burn you in effigy or burn a cross in front of your house, like the KKK would do to, you know, Black activists and stuff like that. So, yes. Muhammad Ali, he had to give up all his creature comforts. Remember, they took away his boxing title. So he and his family kind of had to, and my dad had to do certain things too, that I'll be talking about in the show. It's a sacrifice that I don't think a lot of people just go, well, what happened to them? Why didn't they just keep fighting? Because the government, Uncle Sam, they don't tell you this in the, you know, no one's, and the media outlets a lot of the times don't even tell.